This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Rites of Passage, a War Machine anthology. Written by Oren Ashkenazi, Darla Kinnerud, Aaron Riddell, Douglas Seacat, William Schick, and Matthew D. Wilson. Narrated by Brian Reed and Mike Ortigo. The Price of a Gift. Written by Matthew D. Wilson and read by Brian Reed.
Early 609 AR. The battlefield raged like a storm. Lightning arced overhead in long, crackling streaks, drawn from the heavens by half-mad scientists who could conjure weather and bend it to their will. Thunder boomed from batteries of cannons and arcanely charged pistols infused with explosive elemental force. The earth quaked beneath the iron feet of massive automatons charging across the landscape, smoke and ash billowing from the steam-powered boilers that propelled each machine's armored mass on an unstoppable rampage of destruction. Lieutenant Allison Jake stood at the center of it all, but there was no calm eye in this storm. Every inch of blood-soaked ground was consumed by the fury of two nations at war and the eternal consequences of their endeavor to eliminate each other from a world too small to contain both their beliefs. Like every soldier at her side, Allison Jakes fought with an intensity only the promise of death can inspire. In her dexterous hands, two mechanically augmented dueling blades flashed in silver arcs around her, slashing and piercing armor and flesh alike. Her faith-driven targets gasped inside their golden helms as white tabards turned red with blood. Unlike the rank-and-file soldiers equipped with standard-issue military hardware around her, Jakes moved with agility and finesse, clad in state-of-the-art armor crafted by the finest mechanics and smiths in Signar. Beneath the outer shell of plates painted blue and white, rune-stamped sheets of precious metals conducted Jakes's own arcane energies to amplify her physical strength and resistance to attacks. Such accoutrements as her armor and weapons were afforded to only the most elite breed of warrior found in the Iron Kingdoms, though often Jakes thought this ironic, as she and those like her arguably needed these advantages the least. For Lieutenant Allison Jakes was a warcaster, a rarity among rarities, gifted in the womb with the talent to manipulate magic and the ability to project her will through mechanical constructs. The ultimate expressions of those machines were self-governing giants of steel and iron that towered over Jakes and the other soldiers on the battlefield. Warjacks, they were called. Warriors born of forge and fire, meticulously constructed in factories and granted the attributes of thought and reason through the fusion of science and magic. Even now, Jakes's senses were intertwined with the consciousness of the metal beast that battled beside her, an ironclad class warjack. Jakes was instinctively aware of every strike landed with its 7-foot-tall quakehammer, cognizant of every blow colliding with its iron carapace, and in her mind's eye, she could see every friend and foe its optical receptors could behold, including the man who had trained her for battle. Girded in gold, he spun his double-bladed staff through an endless series of energized attacks, cleaving through armor and leaving a trail of gutted corpses in his wake. If the battlefield was a storm, he was its epicenter. Jakes needed neither her own eyes nor those of her warjack to know he was near. This man, a force of nature by any measure, simultaneously visited ruin upon the flame-bearing fanatics before him while commanding an army with artistic ease. A cadre of warjacks linked to his mind executed every silent order with precision and potency, while he directed an array of spells that could transpose his position on the battlefield as quickly as they could blacken his enemies with lightning. For all his deadliness, for all his authority and the force with which he dominated this chaotic arena, Allison Jakes revered him more than any man living or dead. To the soldiers on the field, he was Commander Dallin Sturgis. To Jakes, he was her mentor, an example every warcaster should aspire to, a model of perfection. But perfect he was not. As Jakes glimpsed him through the eyes of her ironclad, the commander was suddenly struck by a blur of bronze orbiting the fist of a massive white warjack by a length of chain as thick as her leg. The vanquisher was 10 tons of blazing retribution, borne on a 12-foot frame, and it had come out of nowhere. By the time its spiked metal sphere completed its second revolution, Sturgis had disappeared from sight amid the haze of the melee. Jakes cried out, her concentration shattered at the sight of her mentor's fall, but her voice was swallowed in the cacophony of metal crashing on metal. She parried the blade of a conscripted tribesman and disengaged, rapidly weaving her way through the fray in search of Sturgis. She could sense his presence. Their connection as warcasters, mentor, and student was as tangible to her as the swords in her hands, but he was nowhere to be seen. A voice called to her. A sergeant leading a squad of pot-helmed trenchers supporting the Signarin advance with rifle fire and strategically placed smoke bombs that concealed them from incoming fire. But recognition of the voice came too late. A crash just steps behind her snapped her consciousness back into the ironclad, in time to realize it had intercepted the attack of a lighter warjack, shielding her from what would surely have been a lethal blow from the enemy's spiked flail. She focused power into the ironclad, guiding its attacks and infusing them with supernatural strength. Fainting with the massive hammer, it reached forth and seized the lighter warjack with its unarmed fist, then twisted with the full force of its hydraulic core and hurled the enemy jack into an oncoming group of zeal-crazed nomads. Her flank momentarily unthreatened, Jakes resumed her frantic search, weaving a spell on the move. 3 small, rapidly spinning rings of glowing runes appeared before her. With a glance, she sent the runes to orbit the ironclad. The enchantment supercharged the machine's power plant, pushing the ironclad beyond the usual limits of its running speed. Under her telepathic control, it raced ahead, scouting as she gathered more support. Mere moments had passed since Sturgis had been struck down. But before Jakes could reach his location, a wall of blue armor converged on the vanquisher like a tidal wave of iron. A spear-wielding centurion warjack and 2 defender-class warjacks brandishing electrified hammers reduced the vanquisher to inanimate scrap before it could continue its assault. The vanquisher's destruction filled Jakes with joy, not because another enemy had fallen, but because she knew her mentor had not succumbed to the attack. This trio of warjacks was his personal battle group, linked to him just as the ironclad was linked to her. If they were still fighting, so was he. Jake strained to be heard above the clamor. "Commander! Commander Sturgis!" Before she could take another breath, he appeared before her. Spiraling rings of luminous arcane runes encircled him, dissipating before Jake's eyes as the spell effect that had brought him concluded. His left pauldron was dented, his rank insignia all but ground off, and dirt streaked his face. But as far as she could see, he was otherwise unharmed. "Commander, thank Morrow," Jakes exhaled in relief, invoking the name of the god she worshipped, as most Signarins did. Sturgis grimaced, not looking at Jakes as he methodically assessed the situation around them. "You left your position, Lieutenant. You exposed our support units to attack." Jakes's guts coiled into knots. Even in the middle of battle, Sturgis made time to impart his lessons, and they were never gentle. "I saw you," was all she could utter. "If you had found me unable to fight, what would you have done?" he barked. But after nearly a year of his tutelage, Jakes knew, she believed in the deepest recesses of her soul, that if she fell in combat, Commander Sturgis would come to her aid.
"Understood, sir," she answered in the most confident voice she could muster to assure him his point had been received.
She was not placating him. Her reply was sincere. By now she knew how he expected his training acknowledged. There was a correct way, and there was a way that produced an excess of monotonous instruction later. Sturgis's eyes glowed subtly as he silently called his warjacks to his side. "Your orders remain the same, Lieutenant. Cover those trenchers. Make sure nothing gets within reach of our artillery.
He was already stalking toward the thick of the fighting before he finished his instructions. "Stay focused. Thunder follows lightning."
"Yes, sir,"
she returned, before the weight of the commander's words had sunk in. He was fond of quoting the informal motto of Signar's fighting men, though the meaning of the phrase shifted subtly depending on the context. She had already witnessed her invincible mentor beaten to the ground and had earned a reprimand for poor leadership. Only as she ordered the trenchers to reposition did she realize what Sturgis meant. This battle had just begun. Fort Falk sprawled along the west bank of the Black River. So widespread was the stronghold that the hilltop itself could no longer be seen. Tasked with guarding the vital waterway and the heavily traveled King's Highway that paralleled it, the fort dominated the landscape with its ever-growing series of squat towers and thick stone walls. It began as a simple border outpost, but as threats to the Kingdom of Signar had grown, so had it, making it the largest military fortification on the nation's eastern border. The 12th Division of the 2nd Army, nearly 30,000 of Signar's bravest, hung their helms inside Fort Fox's cavernous expanse. Recently arrived from the cosmopolitan capital city of Caspia was Allison Jakes, garrisoned here under the personal authority of Commander Dallin Sturgis, who would complete her journeyman warcaster training over the course of her first tour of duty. Barely 19 years old, Jakes was older than most of the fresh recruits, but young when measured against the handful of remarkable warcasters famous for leading Signar's armies into battle. The explanation for their rarity was a mystery science had yet to decode. 1 in 1,000 were born with the gift, that extraordinary ability to shape the world's unseen magical energies into tangible form. But only 1 in 100,000 at best could commune with Mechanica, the arcane machines, and were granted the distinction of being called Warcaster. Recipients of the gift could go years, even a lifetime, before their innate talent revealed itself, often manifesting in moments of extreme danger or emotional stress. Jakes's power, however, had been apparent since infancy through the subtle effect her will had on the environment around her and the electric blue spark that flared in her eyes every time she was near Mechanica. Her father, a successful barrister, and her mother, a diva famous for filling the gilded halls of the Caspian Opera, ensured Jakes enjoyed a life of privilege, but her childhood was far from carefree. Recognizing her considerable talent at a young age and possessing a strong sense of national duty, Jakes's parents began her arcane education before she could walk, expecting her to follow a military career. Private training in the dueling arts came next, and by the time she had reached the minimum age for entry into Signar Strategic Academy, she was an accomplished fighter and capable spellcaster. At the Caspian branch of the academy, Jakes was indoctrinated in the military system and trained to be a shining example of martial leadership. It was there she first experienced the communion between Warcaster and Warjack, and that was also the first occasion in her educational history when she did not excel. Jakes chewed her bottom lip, recalling that moment bitterly while she stood in the center of Fort Fox's training grounds. The quadrangle, wide enough to march a full regiment through in parade formation, was a constant spectacle of combat drills, physical conditioning, and pre-deployment assemblies. Jakes had just enjoyed a sparring session with her commander, the kind of session that left her basking in the admiration of dazzled onlookers and the accolades of her mentor. But that glow was snuffed when Sturgis summoned a trio of warjacks to the patch of paverstones he had chalked out for her training. The warjacks lumbered toward them, each step of their heavy gaits vibrating the ground beneath Jakes's feet. Despite being entirely mechanical, the fluid manner in which they moved made them seem more like armored beasts than machines. Even the rhythmic pumping of their pressurized steam boilers projected the appearance of living, breathing creatures. Responsible for this illusion was the spherical cortex buried deep within each warjack's iron hull. Though primitive in its capacity compared to a human brain, this magical brain gave warjacks lifelike control of their constructed forms.
They could learn and store memories and were even capable of developing unique personalities. The newest of these three warjacks had been in service more than 2 decades, and age had rendered each one a distinct temperament Jakes had come to know well. The Centurion carried itself proudly. Jakes knew from experience that it fought methodically, preferring precise, calculated strikes over more energy-intensive attacks. The much lighter Lancer was shamelessly sneaky, a trait rare for its class of frontline fighter. It eschewed head-to-head combat in favor of ambush tactics, and she had observed in it a predilection toward petulant behavior. Finally, there was the Ironclad, which Jakes had secretly named Bunker after its propensity to end up face down in the dirt. Bunker was Jakes's antithesis in every way, possessing neither grace nor style, and since the Ironclad had been assigned as her personal warjack, she had come to regard it as her greatest nemesis.
"Sir," Jakes asked, already knowing the answer, "should we go over that last parry-strike combination again? I feel like I could get through it a little faster, maybe add a bit of a twist."
She pantomimed the motions with theatrical flourish. "Your speed and form are perfect. Your execution is perfect," Sturgis stated. "Your command of warjacks is not." Jakes thought that was a gross understatement of her situation. It had been 3 months since she had arrived at Fort Falk with Sturgis, and not a day had passed that they did not train, save for those spent on patrol or engaged in one of the frequent border skirmishes that plagued this region. Jakes never grew weary of the exercises, and she felt her combat skills growing daily. But though the martial arts and even spellcasting came easily to her, controlling warjacks did not.
"Establish your bond," Sturgis told her.
Her nose wrinkled.
"Bunker again?"
she asked, instantly aware that it sounded more like a protest than intended. Sturgis gave her an odd look. She hadn't shared her nickname for the Jack.
The Ironclad, right?"
He didn't answer. The pairing was simply assumed. It was always Bunker. The Ironclad tracked her with its expressionless gaze as she crossed the training area to meet it.
"Looks like you and me again," she muttered as she reached for Bunker's chest and stared up into its amber eyes.
The moment her palm made contact, her eyes pulsed with light and the warjack's eyes flashed blue in response. She was instantly overcome with the familiar sensation of falling, not backward, but forward into the warjack, passing through it. Light and sound faded as the consciousness of the two merged. She felt Bunker's steam pumping through her veins and its fire burning within her chest. Her muscles tensed, ready to explode into motion, and her flesh tightened until it felt as hard as iron. There was no discomfort, no pain, only a euphoric feeling of power and absolute invincibility. A heartbeat later, she was staring at her own face through the warjack's eyes, and then her senses became her own again. The invisible bond between Jakes and the Ironclad was created at the speed of thought. Now this walking weapon of mass destruction would execute her every command, more or less.
"I hate you, Bunker," she thought,
the pit in her stomach growing by the moment. The Ironclad replied with a burst of steam from a pair of vents behind its slotted face grill, and Jakes could feel its unspoken protest in her mind. Communication between a warcaster and warjack was felt, not spoken, and as on many occasions before, she was grateful these machines had no capacity for speech.
"Let's begin," Sturgis said,
stepping backward out of the training area. The scenario was always the same. Sturgis would control the Centurion and Lancer from the sideline, while Jakes and her Ironclad attempted to battle them out of the chalk ring. Success required that both the Centurion and Lancer be outside the ring at the same time, while neither she nor the Ironclad could leave the circle, and Jakes had never succeeded. Jakes drew her training blades, blunted facsimiles of the dueling weapons custom created for her before she began her tour with Sturgis. They were mechanical, just as her fighting blades were, but though they would leave more than a mark on any living opponent, they weren't likely to pierce the iron plating of the armored warjacks. All the same, the warjacks were strapped with leather sparring pads, and their own practice weapons were wrapped in burlap blankets stuffed with wool. To further minimize damage to each other, and, more importantly, to Jake's, the Warjacks had standing orders to pull their attacks in practice, but that didn't make the many bruises covering her body hurt any less. Without warning, the Centurion began to charge.
"Wait, I didn't say ready!" Jake's cried as she quickly sidestepped out of the way and back toward the ironclad for protection.
"I didn't ask if you were,"
Sturgis replied as he paced the perimeter of the sparring ring.
"But you always wait until I'm ready."
She dropped her right foot back and adopted a defensive stance as the Centurion wheeled to face her.
"Ready is a relative condition," he said.
Before she could reply, he struck the ground with his training staff and barked,
"Now focus, Jake's!"
From the corner of her eye, Jake saw the blue runes of a spell ignite around him and braced for whatever he was about to throw at her. An instant later, a flurry of lightning strikes broke out over the ironclad, scorching its protective padding with electricity, but the magical storm had not come directly from Sturgis. It was at that moment she realized that both she and Bunker were watching the Centurion, and neither was paying attention to the agent of the arcane attack, the shifty Lancer stalking them from behind. Atop the Lancer's armored carapace was mounted a device called an Arcnode, advanced technology that enabled Sturgis to send his spell through it to a target far beyond his normal reach, rather than attack it, or her, directly. Sensing the threat, the ironclad turned to meet the Lancer head-on, blocking Jake's attempt to close the distance to it before Sturgis could target one of them again. Instead, the Lancer charged.
"Move it, you lug!"
she said aloud, catching herself before Sturgis remarked on her poor habit of speaking to the Jack.
"Take the Centurion!"
Untangling herself from Bunker, Jake's whirled just in time to evade the Lancer's oncoming spear. A retaliatory strike from her sword glanced off its padded shield as she ducked under its backswing. Two swift steps and a half pirouette put her in position to ram her dagger backward into the Jax's boiler. It was not a lethal blow, but using her focus, she was able to channel just enough arcane energy through the blade to send the Lancer staggering forward. A series of heavy whumps redirected her attention to the ironclad. The Centurion easily rebuffed its hammer blows with a heavy shield, waiting for the precise moment to strike.
"Get its spear,"
she commanded telepathically. Her focused attacks on the Lancer had momentarily depleted her reservoir of energy, though, and without her guidance, the ironclad wasn't skilled enough to attempt such a complex grapple. As the ironclad wound up for another swing, the Centurion thrust its spear forward into her warjack's core. An instant later, the Centurion bashed its shield into Bunker's chin, sending the Jack stumbling backward. Jake's winced. During her defensive footwork, Sturgis had maneuvered both the Lancer and Centurion between her and her warjack, forcing them toward opposite sides of the ring. Bunker needed her assistance quickly, or it would end up over the chalk line.
"You lost track of your warjack, Jake's," Sturgis chastised. "Get the blinders off."
Her lack of situational awareness had been a constant point of Sturgis's criticism. On her own, she was more than capable of engaging multiple opponents, but when controlling a warjack, she struggled to keep her attention on it without leaving herself vulnerable to attack.
"Damn it, Bunker, you're never where you're supposed to be."
She projected her senses into the ironclad, her mind racing to find the perfect counterattack that would shift the advantage in this fight. But the Lancer came about, continuing its assault on her and breaking her concentration. The best she could manage was impelling the ironclad to disengage before it got pummeled to the ground.
"Focus, Jake's! Empower your ironclad's attacks!"
Sturgis called, urging her to concentrate on the Centurion. But the Lancer continued to drive her back, increasing the distance between her and the ironclad. Across the ring, she saw the Centurion deliver another measured blow with its spear, a downward blow across Bunker's back that forced the ironclad onto one knee. Another bash with the shield, and Bunker slid backward, its left foot scraping through the chalk line. The ironclad dug its right hand into the ground, tearing up pavers to prevent being shoved from the ring. Jake's grunted in frustration, knowing it was now or never, but every time she felt ready to focus through the ironclad, the Lancer would distract her. She backstepped out of its range and summoned her will, preparing to commit every bit of her focus to a perfectly executed offense. "Hang on, Bunker, here it comes," she said through their telepathic connection, visualizing the ironclad launching forward and ramming its armored skull into the face of the Centurion, a move that would surely turn the tide. "If I can make it work." But that infuriating lancer would not stop dogging her. "Focus on its attacks! Now!" Sturgis's voice rang in her ears as the Centurion repeatedly crashed its shield over the ironclad, hammering the warjack down like a nail. It was all she could do not to scream, "Just once let me get this right!" She needed space, breathing room to focus. Deflecting the lancer's spear, she backpedaled further out of its range and transferred her full attention into the ironclad's mind, centering her consciousness in its space. And then it was gone. In mid-step, she realized she had backed away too far, exceeded the range of her ability to maintain a functional bond with the warjack. It was as if her head had been shoved underwater. Their connection was all but a distant echo in her mind. Without a stronger connection, she couldn't focus through the warjack, and it was helpless against the Centurion charged with Sturgis's power. Jakes cursed under her breath and swung her body forward, trying to reestablish the mental connection, but the lancer had followed up, leaving no room to advance. Pitiless, it beat her back with its shield, sending her stumbling across the chalk line and onto her rear. And then she could swear it laughed, at least as much as a warjack could laugh. Steam bursting from its face vents, it banged its spear on the front of its shield. A platoon of soldiers marching across the quad appeared to lose their timing for a moment. Faces turned toward her, and Jake saw far too much amusement in their expressions. Her blood boiled. In an instant, Jake's was on her feet, arcane energy flowing into her blades as she charged at the showboating lancer. Sparring blades or not, she aimed to remove its beak-like head. "Lieutenant Jake, stand down!" A wall of stone could not have stopped her more quickly. In the 9 months she had trained with him, Sturgis had never reprimanded her. Her guts knotted as she fought to contain her embarrassment. "Why do you hesitate?" Sturgis asked, no anger in his voice. She peered at him from beneath her lowered brow, a stray lock of red hair obscuring one eye.
You told me to stand down, Commander," she replied uncertainly. "But that jack has it coming, so if you want me to—"
"You became separated from your warjack because you did not take control of it. These machines are weapons, just like the swords in your hands, and they are only as effective as the warcaster who wields them."
"Yes, sir,"
she said softly, casting her eyes to the ground again. Sturgis walked the short distance to the ironclad, which had regained its feet. Lifting the protective padding, he inspected it for damage.
"Why didn't you press your warjack's attack when you had the chance? You could have held the lancer at bay. It was not your priority."
"It's Bunker. Every time I—"
Sturgis looked back over his shoulder at her, his expression perplexed.
"The ironclad," she clarified. "Every time I turn around, I'm bumping into it like it's glued to my back. And it can't stay on its feet. It falls down every time we're in a fight. Have you seen how mangled its grill is?"
Sturgis ran an armored finger over the bronze face grill on the ironclad, examining its irregularities.
"This warjack has served me in over a dozen engagements. I've seen no flaw in its performance."
Wiping soot off his gauntlets, he walked slowly back to her.
"When you fight alone, you are as confident and capable a warrior as I have ever trained. But you struggle with warjacks like no one I've known who possessed the talent for them. You're hesitant, unsure. You neglect your bond."
Jake stared at his feet, unable to meet his gaze.
"It's hard."
"Of course it is," he said, laughing.
Jakes could count on one hand the number of times she'd heard Sturgis break his characteristic professional stoicism.
"That's why we train."
His voice softened, and he spoke gently.
"Why can't you commit to the warjack, Allison?"
He had never called her by her given name. In their military culture, a soldier's first name was reserved for casual interactions and only within the same stratum. And this was Dallin Sturgis,
a machine built for war as much as any warjack she'd seen. She admired that in him and relied on his consistent nature. It was the only thing that offered her any stability in this violent and unpredictable existence. But this tiny gesture of compassion, this break in formality, jarred her sensibilities. It disarmed her, and she suddenly found herself speaking not to a superior officer or an instructor, but to a trusted confidant. "I just want it to be perfect," she confessed. "I need to get it perfect." Jake stopped herself, remembering her rank, but Sturgis only scratched absently at his tightly trimmed beard as he considered her words. "This need to be perfect, Allison," he said, "is a mask for what you're truly feeling." She swallowed nervously, feeling as if he were peeling back her armor to expose her beating heart. She knew exactly what he was going to say, what she felt. Fear. Since the kingdom of Lael had fallen to the Kaedoran Empire over 4 years ago, the Protectorate of Menoth had exploited the opportunity to wage a bloody campaign across the fractured region. Recruiting the vast number of faithful beyond their own borders and exterminating any who failed to answer the call of their angry god, Hierarch Severius and the high priests of the Protectorate continued to commit the bulk of the nation's military force to their northern crusade. Fueling the crusade required constant replenishment of munitions, troops, and warjacks across the great distance separating the Protectorate from its armies in Lael. In an effort to liberate their Laelis allies and hinder the growth of the Protectorate's fanatical following, Signar's military had made many attempts to sever this supply line, which operated just beyond their border on the opposite side of the Black River. With each endeavor to blockade the supply line, Signar was met with a larger and better equipped escort to safeguard the Protectorate's vital cargo. The ongoing conflict had proven costly for both sides, until finally, the Protectorate had committed what was effectively an entire army to attend the supply column. Knowing this, Jakes marveled at her commander's unfolding plan as a wall of lightning-slinging storm knights drove ranks of Protectorate soldiers before them like cattle. From their hidden vantage, Jakes had watched as the Protectorate column emerged from the narrow pass cutting through a rocky gorge that concealed their northward movement from Signaran border patrols. As they moved into the plains and approached the shallow tributary known as Kerley's Crossing, they widened their formations to cover ground faster and reduced the duration of the exposed river fording required for their passage. Jakes had only moments to count the dozens of warjacks among the Protectorate's white and gold battalions before Sturgis ordered the flare that would spring his trap. As phosphorus exploded against the murky dawn, unseen Signaran cannons pummeled the bank of the crossing from the safety of their camouflaged positions on the opposite side. Instantly, the Protectorate column halted their progress, and its leader ordered a retreat from the river's edge. With the sudden chaos of communicating a new course throughout their ranks rendering the column vulnerable, Sturgis struck. The Stormlands cavalry led the charge from the army's hidden location in the foothills above the plains, their voltaic lances scattering the Protectorate flank with bursts of flesh-searing lightning. Jakes and Bunker followed Sturgis and his mechanized battle group into the fray, surrounded by a blue sea of armored knights and trenchers. Through the forest of bobbing helms and halberds, Jakes could see another host of warjacks trailing the famed mechanic, Captain Dominic Darius, as he tromped across the field in his custom-built, steam-powered suit. Calling the attack an ambush would be like calling the great Meridius a pond. And like the tidal waves common to that treacherous ocean, the Signarans crashed upon the Protectorate column, forcing them to flee westward, right into Sturgis's snare. Kerley's Crossing to the north, impassable mountains to the south, and the Black River to their backs, the Protectorate column was slowly pushed into the entrapping terrain, just as Sturgis had predicted in the officer's briefing the evening before. But Sturgis was never one to underestimate his enemies, and his cautionary words still rang in Jake's mind as the battle raged around her. They will fight to the last. The Protectorate met the assault with flame and furor, giving no ground that the Signarans did not pay for in blood.
Like wild animals, the packs of zealots fought with even greater fury the tighter quarters became. The army also included a legion of temple flame guards with their impenetrable shield walls and at least two warcasters commanding battle groups of warjacks. Jake soon realized the protectorate column was not unprepared, they were only outmaneuvered. When Sturgis had been knocked down by the vanquisher's attack, Jake's had feared the worst. Without the commander, the operation was doomed. Without her mentor, Jake's thought she'd never survive such an engagement. But when he had emerged unscathed, her faith in his leadership redoubled, filling her with the courage to meet any adversary so long as it was at his side. Now, as the full radiance of the sun rose above the mountains behind them, Sturgis brought the hammer to the anvil. Manned by teams of trenchers, a score of heavy cannons packed with explosive ordnance inched forward behind the Signarin army. When Sturgis gave the signal for the artillery to advance, Jake's knew only minutes remained until the guns would unleash hell upon the entrapped crusaders. Then hell was unleashed upon Signarins. Even over the clashing blades and clanging warjacks, Jake's heard the distant herald of fiery death. First a low whistle, the familiar sound grew louder, until it was a high-pitched shriek that rose above all other clamor. "Incoming!" bellowed a trencher. Jake's cast her eyes to the sky, where a swarm of sparkling rockets streaked toward the unwary artillery slogging across the battle-churned field. On the open plain, there was no cover, which was precisely the reason Sturgis had chosen this location to waylay the supply column. Now, though, Jake's cringed as the cannon crews dove to the ground, the rockets impacting around them in ear-splitting bursts. A single missile exploded upon a cannon, detonating its own loaded shell and shattering the case into iron shards that scythed through a trio of trenchers, unlucky enough to be caught in the blast. Had the rockets been more accurate, half the artillery and crew might have been eliminated in a single barrage. A tangle of smoky black tendrils hung in the air, pointing like a road sign to the source of the rockets. Squinting, Jake's could see a cluster of white-garbed soldiers perched atop a ridge near the pass the protectorate column had emerged from. "Deliverers!" Sturgis shouted as he broke toward Jake's while a pair of centurions moved to fill the gap he left behind. "They've left a rear guard in the canyon," he told her, indicating the rocketeers on the ridge. "I want you to get up there and knock them off those rocks. Take Whisker and a section from 4th Platoon and make sure not a single deliverer walks away. If we lose our artillery, these Menites will easily overrun us once they regroup." Jake's felt the grip of fear around her throat. She knew she was supposed to respond, but that simple acknowledgement of her commander's orders would not form on her lips. Sturgis didn't seem to notice as he beckoned to the nearest trencher sergeant and a frizz-haired stormcaller who had just directed a bolt of lightning at a protectorate warjack. "Whisker! Sergeant! You're with Lieutenant Jake's," the commander ordered. Before the sergeant could snap a salute and acknowledge this, Sturgis was gone, rushing back into the broil. Jake's blanched and stared at the men gathering before her. Almost 4 decades older than Jake's, Sergeant Hollings stepped to the center and regarded her with every bit of soldierly professionalism he had shown Sturgis.
"Gravedig is at your command, ma'am," he announced,
using the epithet proudly adopted by the hardened men that comprise Signar's most frequently deployed fighters. She yearned to join Sturgis in the battle. By his side, she was fearless, confident in her own combat skills and secure in the knowledge that her mentor's guidance was readily available. Now he was sending her in the opposite direction of the conflict with minimal instruction and an objective for which she'd received no specific training. Had she been left alone with Bunker, she'd have been far less daunted. At least she had finally developed something resembling compatibility with the warjack. But the 11 faces gazing at her now, trusted allies, trained soldiers ready to follow her every direction, scared her more than any enemy on the battlefield. It wasn't her life she feared for. It was theirs. Jake stared straight ahead as if in a trance. In her mind, the world moved in slow motion as she peered through Bunker's eyes, gauging the distance between it and their two adversaries. As the lancer circled wide, angling for an attack, the centurion moved across the sparring ring with its back to the ironclad while coiling its arm in preparation for a strike. Suddenly, the padded head of a spear rocketed toward Jake's face, and her vision snapped back into her own time and space. Dipping backward reflexively, she swung her body under the centurion's extended spear and pivoted on her left foot into a three-quarter turn that ended with both magically charged blades striking the jack's undefended side. The centurion careened forward under its own momentum, just managing to dig the edge of its shield into the paving stones in time to stop itself from crossing the edge of the ring. Without pausing, Jake's reached out with her mind to focus through the ironclad, spurring the warjack into a charge. 2 steps from the smaller lancer, Bunker twisted and lowered its shoulder, slamming its massive hull into the smaller warjack and launching the machine through the air. Jake sprinted toward the airborne lancer, already feeling the satisfaction of beating the irritating jack. Splitting her focus, she charged 1 blade for her assault on the lancer while searching the ironclad's vision for her other adversary. To her alarm, she spotted Bunker about to trample her from behind. "You idiot! You're supposed to be on the Centurion!" Her concentration was instantly shattered, the link between her and the ironclad suddenly a confusing blur of images and sensations. She needed to correct its course, focus its attack, but all she could think of was getting out of the way. Throwing her body forward into a roll, she barely missed being crushed by Bunker just as the Centurion smashed into the ironclad from the side. The impact drove Bunker's grill into the pavers, laying the jack out like a pile of discarded junk. As Jake's regained her feet, she realized the Centurion's attack had actually been meant for her. Bunker struggled to push itself up off the ground, but the Centurion drove it back onto the pavers with the butt of its spear. Using the distraction to her advantage, Jake's rushed the Centurion from behind and laid into it with a series of focused attacks. When it turned quickly to defend itself, the massive warjack stumbled forward and tripped over the bulk of the prone ironclad, which sent it staggering over the edge of the practice ring. Glimpsing the lancer back on its feet, Jake's quickly hunched down behind the ironclad to conceal herself. Holding her breath, she waited, listening for which direction the lancer would move in its hunt for her. As it moved counterclockwise around the ironclad, Jake's crept silently in the same direction, circling behind the unsuspecting lancer. With a furious battle cry, she waylaid the light jack and struck when its weight was on a single leg between steps, off-balancing it to send it reeling from the ring, nearly tripping into the rising centurion.
"Well done, Lieutenant," Sturgis said as he walked toward her. "A well-executed defense. Excellent reversal." Her heart pounding with exertion, Jake's hadn't even processed that she had just defeated both of Sturgis's warjacks for the first time.
"Thank you, sir," she replied, without a hint of pride.
Succeeding at the expense of her ironclad had sucked any gratification out of her victory.
"That was a risky gambit, but it paid off," Sturgis said,
patting the ironclad's armored shoulder as it labored to right itself.
"Expensive as they are, a warjack is a small price to pay for victory or your life."
There had been no gambit, though. Without Jake's direction, Bunker had thrown itself in the way of what would have been, in real combat, a lethal attack from the Centurion. All Jake's had done was use the stalwart warjack's dented wreck for cover. This truth was more embarrassing than being beaten so handily by the lancer only a week before. She needed to come clean.
"Sir," she started, unsure how to put the words together. "I'm afraid that wasn't..."
Sturgis raised his hand, interrupting her stammering.
"It wasn't perfect, Allison, but you achieved your objective. That is what's important."
He circled around the Centurion, checking the fuel gauge on its furnace before silently commanding it and the other jacks to return to the armory for repairs.
"This desire for perfection has paralyzed you before at critical moments that required action. Permitting yourself to fail, as you did today, gave you the courage to grasp victory.
If he could read the confusion in her expression, Sturgis didn't comment on it. She hadn't permitted herself anything. Fear had beaten her again, and she knew it. Why didn't he?
"It's time for you to start drilling with a squad," he said, hoisting his dual-bladed staff over his shoulder. "You'll be leading soldiers soon. That's going to make commanding Warjack seem easy," he added with a wry grin.
Jakes was almost sure the lump that had just formed in her throat was visible.
"Commander Sturgis," she said, walking two steps behind him as he followed the Jacks to the armory. "I feel like I've got a lot more to learn."
The commander nodded.
"We all do. The moment you think you've learned everything there is to know, some hairy northerner or crazed fanatic will prove you wrong."
"I understand,"
Jake spoke slowly, fighting to keep from sounding like a fragile child.
"But if I'm not perfect, if I can't do everything a warcaster is meant to do flawlessly, how will you know when I'm ready?"
"Ready?"
"You know, ready to lead," she replied.
Sturgis finally paused, turning to face her. The humor was gone from his expression, replaced by the quiet understanding Jakes had yet to become comfortable with in a superior officer.
"No one is ever ready, Allison. Not for war. Not for the things you will have to see or do. But we do what we must, all the same."
She tried to swallow, but the lump in her throat wouldn't budge. As she had on many occasions since entering the Strategic Academy, she wondered how this rare talent she was born with had ever come to be known as the gift.
"Ma'am?"
There was a pause.
"Your orders, ma'am,"
Sergeant Hollings repeated. But Jakes was frozen in place, her mind caving under the weight of her immense responsibility. A new salvo of rockets screamed over the trampled plain and detonated amid the scrambling Signarin artillery crews, shattering Jakes's momentary daze. A series of secondary explosions signaled the hit on an ammunition crate, but from her position, none of the crewmen appeared to be caught in the blasts. Jakes knew, though, that another moment's hesitation would cost lives. Hollings' professional regard had turned doubtful. She could see it in his ruddy face. He eyed her uncertainly. But it was the youngest of the men before her that broke the brief but uncomfortable silence.
"Pardon my speaking out of line, ma'am,"
the trencher said, sighting downfield through the scope mounted on his rifle. He was the only soldier in his section to have such a scope, she noticed.
"But if we can get yonder of those cannons, I can knock them candles off those rocks. Sure as the sarge can whistle Swanee."
To call him a man was to show him the respect his courage as a soldier deserved, but in every other way he seemed just a boy. His face was smooth, save for a few blemishes of adolescence scattered across his cheeks, and Jakes noticed that his voice cracked when he spoke, yet to find its permanent octave.
"It's truth, ma'am," Hollings said, nodding to the boy. "Wally's the deadest eye in Forth."
"He's positively peerless,"
Whisker intoned, his obvious overbite beneath the blank stare of his tinted goggles giving him an almost puppet-like appearance.
"Lightning fast, too. I've seen it myself."
Jakes wore the rank of lieutenant on her left shoulder and the uniform of a warcaster beneath her armor. The pair of mechanica blades she carried and the arcanely enhanced armor she wore cost more than the collective kit of the entire squad before her, and she had 6.5 tons of walking iron at her command. But in every way, she felt a fraud. To lead these men into combat was to accept their blood upon her hands should she fail them. To renounce her responsibility was to consign the artillery crews, and very likely every Signarin east of the Black River, to certain death. And as she knew in her knotted gut, there was no choice she could make that would guarantee the prevention of either. "Gravediggers, Stormy, we need to get those candles off that hill," Jakes finally uttered, using the soldiers' derogatory slang for their fire-loving enemy. She drew her hand cannon from its holster and checked the round, mustering all the bravado she could fake. Growing up, the daughter of a diva had endowed her with some ability to perform, even when the performance wasn't honest. Who's ready?
Dig deep,
the trenchers barked their famous battle cry.
Charge to capacity,
Whisker added with excitement. No one is ever ready, Jakes thought. She pivoted on her heel, simultaneously sending a mental command to Bunker to keep pace with her.
Double time,
she shouted, ramping into a jog as the squad fell in behind her. Running straight toward another volley of rockets launched from the deliverers, Jakes clung to the lessons of her mentor and prayed tomorrow they would be enough. But we do what we must. Sturgis walked across the sparring ring, dragging a long, heavy iron chain. Jakes watched, puzzled, as he anchored one end of the chain to a tie-down ring on the back of the ironclad and returned to her with the opposite end of the chain and a stout padlock.
Put this around your waist,
he said, handing her the chain. She stared at him, even more baffled. I thought Jack Halling had been outlawed, she said, half in jest. Warily, she accepted the chain and looped it behind her lower back. Sturgis chuckled as he secured the loop snugly around her waist with the padlock. The gruesome form of torture involving strapping a man to a searing hot warjack hadn't been practiced since Signar's current king had taken the throne.
You're not being punished, he said as he located the center of the chain and tied what appeared to be a 12-pound shot on the end of a short rope to it.
You want to tell that to the peanut gallery?
She asked incredulously, nodding toward a small crowd of soldiers gathering a distance from the sparring ring.
I'm pretty sure I saw one of them holding a bag of rotten fruit.
This chain,
Sturgis held it up so the attached cannonball hung below his hand,
represents the maximum range you can control your warjack. As you get farther apart, you'll feel resistance from the weight hanging here. That will be your signal to close the distance to the warjack before your mental connection becomes ineffective.
Jakes nodded. Okay, I get it. She grabbed the chain in front of her and took a few steps backward to get a feel for its weight.
Excellent, Sturgis said, striding to the edge of the ring. You'll train with the chain on until you can intuitively sense the edge of your effective range.
She gawked at him.
You want me to wear this while we're sparring?
Are you ready?
You've got to be kid-
Very good,
he said, cutting her off. He crossed his arms across his chest and his eyes flared blue. The Centurion and Lancer both lurched forward, each adopting its combat posture as it advanced on its chosen target. Jakes dropped into a defensive stance as the Lancer stalked toward her. Jockeying for the best angle, she repeatedly stepped on the chain, which distracted her from maneuvering and prevented her from taking the offensive. The Lancer struck with a series of rapid thrusts. Jakes parried the first and backpedaled out of range, struggling to maintain awareness of the ironclad's situation. She focused through the warjack to energize a powerful blow from its hammer that sent the Centurion reeling toward the edge of the ring. By carefully balancing her defense and offense, she had gained a slight advantage, and she quickly moved to exploit it. Keeping the Lancer's attention on her, she retreated from it in a wide arc. Rather than having Bunker follow through with its attack on the Centurion, she concentrated her full focus on it and spurred the ironclad into a charge on the Lancer. She felt clever as she sprinted across the ring toward the Centurion. With both of the other jacks fixated on their retreating targets, they'd never see the attacks coming. Through Bunker's eyes, she saw the Lancer spin to face it the moment before impact. With a deafening crash, Bunker slammed the Lancer with its full force. Grinning, Jakes leaped for the Centurion, charging her mechanical sword with arcane energy. Then, in mid-air, the moment before she could land the strike, she suddenly felt as if she'd been torn in half. Flying forward one moment, she was yanked backward and flung to the ground, pounding the wind from her lungs. Her weapons clattered across the ground, and her armor sparked on the pavers as Bunker's forward momentum dragged her across the sparring ring. Unable to lie on her back because of the cumbersome turbine that powered her protective power field, she rolled to her front, supporting herself with one arm as she gasped for air. She could see the gathered soldiers struggling to contain their laughter. Sturgis appeared and knelt by her side.
Are you hurt?
Still unable to speak, She shook her head. But in that moment, she wished she could sink into the ground, away from scrutiny.
"You didn't feel the weight," Sturgis said. "You were too concerned with your attacks."
She nodded, glowering at the soldiers.
"Tell me, how many times will you have to get knocked down before you can sense the edge of your control area?"
Sturgis's face was stoic. She couldn't tell if the question was earnest or rhetorical. Wheezing, chest burning, she finally managed to force words from her mouth.
"I don't know, but I'll try again."
"Good." Sturgis grinned and hoisted her to her feet.
"Is he actually proud of me?" she wondered, unable to read the intention in his expression or his response.
"It's not important how many times you get knocked down. What's important is that you're willing to get knocked down."
The deliverer's head jerked backward, perforated by a single rifle round expertly fired by Private First Class Benjamin Wallace. The man's lifeless body slumped behind one of the several moss-covered boulders where the rocketeers had taken cover. That was the third deliverer put down by Wally, who was every bit the sharpshooter his squad mates had so glowingly advertised.
"It ain't nothing really, ma'am,"
Wally shouted over the staccato pop of the squad's suppressing fire, never looking away from his scope as he chambered another round in his rifle.
"Back in the Westons, I ain't got one of those fancy glasses, and marsh turkeys hide a whole lot better than these fellas."
Jakes had to smile at the young trencher's endless banter. She'd learned more about him in the few short minutes they'd been pushing their way up this hill than she knew about many of the classmates she'd seen every day for 2 years at the Strategic Academy. The only son in his family, Wally had 5 older sisters, and not one could bake a pudding as good as the army cooks at Fort Falk. Sergeant Hollings had been teaching him letters, at least enough to know how to avoid the stuff that could blow up. And even though his mother begged him not to, he'd volunteered for the service because he figured any king good enough for his daddy and granddaddy to die for was a king who deserved whatever small help he could offer. At 19, Jakes was accustomed to feeling inexperienced in the presence of the veteran soldiers and officers she encountered daily, but Wally made her feel as if she'd already lived a lifetime. Despite his trappings as a soldier, she couldn't look at him without seeing a young boy she needed to shelter. Another pop from Wally's rifle, and another deliverer went down. Under the constant barrage of gunfire, the deliverers couldn't bring their cumbersome launchers to bear, and every attempt brought them a wound or casualty. With nearly half the squad incapacitated, the survivors changed tactics and began to slowly move back into the pass, using the large rocks and thick chaparral to cover their retreat. Sturgis had ordered the threat neutralized, though, and Jakes resolved to eliminate any possibility that another rocket might endanger the Signarin artillery again. But the labyrinthine pass ahead was unknown, and she wasn't ready to put her squad at risk if the deliverers were up to something.
"Hold position," she called out as she marched forward with Bunker at her side.
Sergeant Hollings took a few cautious steps in pursuit.
"Lieutenant," he asked, perplexed, "shall I move the lads up to cover your advance?"
"I said hold, Sergeant,"
Jakes barked back as confidently as she could manage, quickening her stride. Despite her rank, she felt categorically unqualified to be giving orders to a man with a military career longer than she'd been alive.
"I want to check it out first."
The trenchers began to fall in behind Hollings, but he held them back with a wave of his hand. He kept pace with Jakes despite his portly physique, but did not overtly assert himself.
"Them crags are twisty, ma'am, full of crisscrosses and switchbacks, and the blooded candles are keen on dirty tricks. They don't care a lick for their mortal skins."
He slowed, letting her move ahead alone, adding,
"You holler if you need us, Lieutenant."
Jakes kept her shoulders squared and her eyes straight ahead.
"Be ready to move on my signal."
"Yes, ma'am,"
she heard behind her as she neared the mouth of the canyon pass. Knowing the sergeant and his men would wait brought her some small sense of relief. She felt no nervousness about mopping up the remaining deliverers, only about putting the lives of her squad at risk
in a situation she wasn't prepared for. The walls of the canyon sloped steeply toward the narrow, travel-worn pass. Wide enough for 10 men to stand shoulder to shoulder, it provided ample room for Jakes and Bunker to maneuver, but would have been impossible to move an army through at anything more than a march. Loose boulders and scrub made the terrain